This is Movies for the Blind, Episode 101, The Private Life of Henry VIII, Part 2.
You're the nicest girl I ever married.
Hi there, and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. We continue with The Private Life of Henry VIII, where we're halfway through the wives. Catherine of Aragon wasn't in the film, a respectable woman of no particular interest, they said. Anne Boleyn, being not respectable and of particular interest, was in the film, albeit on the day of her execution. And then there was Jane Seymour, whom Henry married immediately after dispatching Anne, but who died after delivering the male heir Henry and the country so desperately desired. And so, we have three wives to go. Catherine Howard has started her flirtation with Henry a bit earlier than happened in real history. More on that later. But before she takes the crown and what comes with it, there's a sort of arranged marriage Henry has to deal with, set up by Thomas Cromwell to ease relations with Europe. So we head to Germany to meet wife number four, played by Elsa Lanchester, a lady best known as the Bride of Frankenstein and the Bride of our star, Charles Laughton, to start off part two of three of The Private Life of Henry VIII. In a German field of sunflowers.
I will not marry your king. I will not. I will not. I will not.
But there's not a princess in Europe who would not be eager for such a match.
What, that Bluebeard?
Oh, princess.
Well, what else is he? His first wife divorced, his second shot, his third dead. A pretty prospect for the fourth. But she will not be Anne of Cleves, and that you may tell him.
As you will, princess.
Why, princess? Last night you called me Anne.
Last night I forgot everything.
Pennell holds her.
Today?
Today forget everything but last night.
They kiss. While in a studio.
How can I paint her highness if she will not sit? When the light is good, she's always in the garden with Master Pennell.
Natürlich. He talks with the tongue, but also with the eyes, that young man. Until he came, she would not hear of this marriage. But now, all goes well. I think so, isn't it?
So the marriage may be. But what about the portrait, Your Grace? Be patient. I will make it that she came already.
The Duke leaves Holbein to work. In the garden, Pennell and Anne break their clinch when a man approaches them through the sunflowers and bows.
May it please Your Grace, the Duke wishes you to come at once.
Anne and Pennell walk the way the man had come. Soon after, the Duke drags her in front of Holbein.
Yes, he is. Now, setz dich.
Ich sitz schon.
She stalks off to a bench and sits down. As the Duke and Pennell leave the studio, Holbein walks out from behind his easel to get a better look at Anne. She makes a face with a big pucker.
Oh, Your Highness, forgive me. But if the king were to see you with that face, it wouldn't help on the marriage.
You think she is ugly, my face?
Only if Your Highness makes it so.
Later, in England, members of the court admire the resulting painting of Anne.
Holbein's masterpiece.
The original stone galley.
Afraid of the storm in the channel.
A pair of doors opens, and Henry strides in stiffly amid bows and curtsies. He stands before the painting and peers at it. Then steps closer. Stepping back, he turns to the lady who'd spoken.
What do you think about it?
Oh, charming, Your Grace.
I was just saying, sir, what a face.
Yes. Well, I don't like that.
He strides away, but spots Thomas and Catherine.
Catherine?
So he approaches her.
Well, what do you think of the new queen?
We're very sorry, sire, that Lady Anne cannot cross the channel.
Yes, I'm sorry, too. I'm a lonely man.
He checks that no one's listening.
Are you going to sing for me again?
Anytime Your Majesty orders me.
Tonight in my rooms.
Hardly the right place for singing, Your Majesty.
Your rooms, then. 11 o'clock. Not a soul will see me.
When he leaves the room, Thomas steps to her and takes her arm.
Catherine, what did you see in here?
Who?
King.
Nothing?
Nothing, but I was watching you.
Oh, spying.
No, but when I see you making yourself cheap...
When you do, come and tell me. Until then, keep your nose out of my affairs.
Catherine.
She slips from his grasp.
Please.
And adjusts her sleeve.
This velvet crushes so.
Then walks away from him. Thomas turns in the king's direction and thinks. Later, a guard dozes while sitting on a bench in a room that Henry enters carefully. Hesitating in the doorway, he gingerly steps down and across the room as the guard wakes.
The king's guard!
Two more guards enter through another doorway.
The king's guard!
Awkwardly adjusting his robe, he walks off between the two guards. Soon after, Henry creeps through an archway to the bottom of some stairs. On a landing above, another guard dozes. Very carefully, Henry goes up the stairs, alert for anyone watching. He slips.
The king's guard!
He regains his feet to find several guards above him.
The king's guard!
He casually mounts the rest of the stairs and walks around a guard to another archway, where he glances back and moves on to a winding set of steps.
The king's...
He covers this guard's mouth, then creeps past him to a small door. Bending down to peek through the keyhole, he straightens up and takes some things from the sleeves of his robe. He takes off his hat and tucks it under his robe, then holds up a tiny mirror to watch himself comb his hair and smooth it down. He combs his full beard, tucking the comb in his shirt. He checks himself in the mirror again, then tucks the mirror away. Adjusting his breeches behind him, he steps up to the door.
Who is that?
Henry.
Henry who?
The king.
Oh, the king. Not the man.
Unlock the door.
Isn't it rather late for a maid to unlock her door to a man?
Oh, come on, unlock the door.
Is that a come on?
Yes.
To the king, then.
She unlocks the door.
Not the man.
And lets him inside, where she curtsies.
Don't do that. I'm leaving my crown outside.
You've left it outside with my reputation, sire.
No one saw me, little Catherine, I swear.
As the guards whisper outside, Henry holds her.
Can't you forget the king and forget the crown and forget everything? You told me once I was a man, huh? What do you say if I'm not the king?
She pushes away.
Get out of my room.
What?
That's what I would say if you were not the king. Since you are the king, I expect your command.
Command.
He advances.
The poor thing to command in love.
In love? Who is in love?
I am with you.
Love eternal, since yesterday afternoon until tomorrow morning.
When I say love, I mean love. Couldn't you love me, little Catherine?
I can't love a man with a wife.
He releases her.
I haven't got a wife.
Lady Anna, please.
Oh, that woman, she's a picture, she's a portrait.
Oh, no, Your Grace. She is much more.
Meanwhile, Cromwell enters a room.
Where is the king? You know?
Thomas stands with a goblet.
You don't care. You're drunk.
He takes the goblet.
The Duchess of Cleves has crossed the channel and is on her way to Rochester. Find the king at once.
That'll be impossible, my lord.
Why?
He turns to Cornell, who whispers in his ear. Cromwell leans against the table, and Cornell whispers more. Thomas touches his sword's hilt.
I'll find the king, my lord. I'll tell him.
He runs off, while in Catherine's room.
Still afraid of me, little Kate?
Of you? No.
What are you afraid of, then?
Of myself, perhaps.
He kisses her passionately as Thomas climbs the steps to her door.
Who's that?
Message for the king.
Catherine goes to the door and opens it. She and Thomas stare at each other. He bows to Henry,
Great news, Your Majesty.
Lady Anne of Cleves has crossed the Channel and is on her way to Rochester.
Marvelous news.
Henry picks up his hat from the bed.
You were right, little Catherine. She seems to be much more than a picture.
He kisses Catherine's hand, then turns to Thomas and leaves the room. Catherine slowly closes her door and leans against it. Later, Anne sits with Pennell.
Here's, how do you say, a pretty kettle of fishes. To be in love with one man and have to marry another.
I know.
What will happen if the king finds out?
We die. But I don't mind.
Oh, but I do.
She kisses him tenderly.
What is to be done?
What can be done? Nothing.
How like a man. To be dead before he is killed. There is always a way out.
What way?
I don't know. But I will find it.
They kiss again. Outside, two guards run to an arched entrance to the grounds of an estate, where they stand just in time for a rider to enter with a flag. He's followed by Henry and some of his advisors, who come to a stop. The Archbishop approaches.
Good morning, my Lord Bishop. How's the Princess?
Expecting Your Majesty.
Henry dismounts and joins the Archbishop to cross the grounds to the main house. Also dismounting, his advisors watch him. Inside, four ladies rush to a doorway to curtsy low, greeting Henry, who looks down at them. The first has a tiny head and a long neck. The second is somewhat plain. The third, older and heavier. The fourth, older still. They stand as the Archbishop enters. Henry steps to the fourth lady and walks down the line, inspecting them.
One of you is not the Princess, I presume.
Oh, nine.
Thank heaven for that.
He steps away and turns back as Anne peeks in with a flat pout. Henry's expression falls, watching Anne enter, making a face somewhat like a duck. Cromwell nervously turns to Henry, who keeps watching Anne approach him with an awkwardly jutting chin. She starts to curtsy, but stumbles, then holds out her arms.
Oh, Heinrich!
She kisses his cheeks, but he eases her away, unsettled.
Welcome to England, madam. I fear you had a bad crossing.
Yes, the wind met the sea, met a trouble, and...
You're pleased to accept my most humble apologies.
Oh, but it is not your fault, the channel chopping.
Nevertheless, I deeply regret any inconvenience you may have been caused.
Oh, please, it is only that the waves come so high upstairs.
Quite. Our channel can be very rough. Well, it isn't smooth.
Oh, it did.
Permit me to express the hope that a short rest will restore you to health, madam.
Thank you. I hope soon I shall eat again. Yes.
By all means. You have our permission to withdraw.
Please?
With a goofy smile, she walks backwards across the room, past her ladies, who curtsy. As Cromwell keeps his head down, all the German ladies leave the room. Huffing with fury, Henry stalks to Cromwell.
You! So that's your idea of freedom? Why, I don't strike you. What's going to face like a... Me, that's never looks at a woman. What am I to do with her?
I believe what I was told, sire.
He grabs Cromwell and shakes him.
All right for you. You haven't got to marry her. I have.
What your disgrace wish me to do, then?
Pack her off to where she came from.
You mean war, sire? And with all Europe against us, this marriage must go on.
All right. Heaven help you, Cromwell.
Henry steps away. Later, again the royal bedding bears the letters H and A, and Cornell struggles with the nurse.
The marriage bed is made, I tell you. Out you go.
I won't.
Woman, I stand here for the king.
I stand for the Duke of York.
The Duke of York? But we have no Duke of York.
No, but you will have one of my charms done its work.
Another charm?
No. The same charm that gave England a Prince of Wales.
Oh, that was the king's doing.
Was it? Did the king have a son by his first wife? No. Did the king have a son by his second wife? No. And why? Because you locked me out. Blah.
She walks around the bed.
You just stand in England's way.
Kissing her charms, she stuffs them under the pillows and pats them hard. Meanwhile, Henry splashes water on his face. Accepting a towel, he dries his face while blowing his nose. As he sits down and tosses the towel, Thomas and Pennell help him undress.
Well, I don't know how I'm going to go through with this. Who can take a horse to the water, but you can't make it drink? I don't know. I suppose it's got to be done. Give him a nightshirt.
His Majesty's nightshirt.
In her room, Anne's new ladies surround her and curtsy in a circle. Then they walk away from her. Standing meekly in her nightdress, Pennell and Thomas help Henry into his long nightshirt as he stands. Anne sits with a mirror, practicing ugly faces. Shaking her head, she bulges her cheeks and furrows her brow.
Yeah, that's right.
Servants leave the bedchamber with the warming pans and the rose water. And Cornell steps out, followed by the nurse.
The royal bedchamber is prepared.
The royal bedchamber is prepared.
Members of the court stand listening.
The royal bedchamber is prepared. The royal bedchamber is prepared.
Anne approaches the marriage bed, looking around. While in an outer hall, court members bow and curtsy when two servants carry torches toward the chamber, followed by Henry in a long robe.
Rosewater.
All rise, and Henry stops to have rosewater sprinkled on him by some of the ladies. In his bare feet, he walks toward the bedchamber, goes up a step, and turns back.
The things I've done for England.
He walks on. Inside, Anne touches the A on the headboard fabric. Hearing his approach, she pulls back covers and gets into the bed. Henry steps to the door, which is flanked by two other torch-bearing guards. He looks back, then opens the door as Anne adopts her ugly face. When Henry enters, Anne bites into an apple.
Didn't they give you enough to eat, madam?
Don't shout at me just because I'm your wife.
My wife.
He scratches his beard.
Not yet.
Poor mother told me. First he says the marriage is no good, and then he cuts off the head meat and axe chopper.
That is an exaggeration, madam.
She stands on the bed.
You say I am not yet your wife.
Well, madam, a marriage ceremony doesn't make us one.
She points at a ring.
Oh, yes, it's all right, but you have to, I have to.
What?
She sits again.
Did your mother not talk to you about...
That?
Awkward, he leans against one of the bed's four posts.
Oh, well, madam, all that stuff about children being found under gooseberry bushes, that's not true.
Oh, no, it was the stork,
The stork?
She nods.
The stork flies in the air with the babes and down the chimney drops, huh?
No, madam, that isn't true either. When a hen lays an egg, it's not entirely all her own doing.
You mean sometimes it was the cuckoo?
Yes, it was the cuckoo. Do you sing?
Nein, in Germany a respectable woman doesn't sing.
Then of course you don't play.
Oh, yes, I do.
I'll go and get you a guitar.
No, I play cards.
Cards? Oh, that's something. I can find a pack in the chest over there.
She goes to get it. While in another room...
Fennel, a drink.
No, thanks.
Thomas keeps drinking. While on the bed, Anne holds the cards.
What stakes shall we play for?
How about that?
She checks her ring and puts it down with hers. Henry deals on a pillow between them.
Don't cry if you lose.
With a smile, she takes a card from the deck. Henry puts down cards and picks others up. Anne does less of the same. Then Henry shows his hand.
Good?
She shows hers.
Better?
Beginner's luck.
She takes her winnings and gathers cards. Then prepares to deal.
Stakes?
Yes.
He puts down another ring.
Don't cry if you lose.
You may not know it, madam, but I'm considered the best card player in England.
He lays down cards and picks up others. He shows his hand and grimaces at hers. Then gathers the cards for another round. Soon after, the courtiers wait outside. Henry walks out and looks around. The men stand and bow.
Has everybody got the money?
They stare at him, confused.
Don't you understand the king's English? I said money!
Henry turns back.
How much was it?
95 crowns.
No! Run to the treasury and get some money!
As Cornell rushes off, Henry stomps back to the bedchamber. Pennell and Thomas look at each other while Henry returns to the bed.
John Hill.
Aren't we getting some money?
Can't you give me 5 minutes credit?
I play for cash.
Henry grabs the deck of cards. As Cornell hurries through the palace, Henry shuffles with frustration. He keeps glancing at the door.
Where's that money?
Cornell heads back with a small bag of crowns. In the bedchamber.
Come in!
Cornell runs in and Henry grabs the bag.
Where have you been? Give me that money! Get out of here! Now!
Cornell runs out as Henry empties the bag and play resumes. Calmly, Anne takes a card, but he stops her from taking another.
Cheating!
Don't shout!
I'm not shouting!
You are!
What am I going to do with you?
Chop my head?
Probably.
You daren't.
Why not?
Because in Europe I will make such a scandal as you never heard. It is not the first time you'd chop the head. Henry the wife butcher, that's what they will call you.
I don't care what they say. I'm not going to live with you.
Well, why don't you divorce me like a gentleman?
Would you consent to a divorce?
I would consent to a divorce.
You're a very reasonable woman. What are your terms?
Two manors.
Granted.
Richmond and Bletchingley with properties.
Granted.
4,000 crowns a year.
Granted.
One of your gentlemen is master of my household.
Take whom you want.
Pennell.
Pennell?
Pennell.
Granted. Is the bargain?
Yeah.
They shake hands.
Confess that you cheated. You go back to Germany.
Back to Germany? I cheated.
She hands back his bag.
Confess, though, that you cheated.
What do you mean?
Didn't you hire a Catherine Howard to play against my queen, huh?
Oh, you knew about that all the time.
Yeah.
It'll only mean another scandal. At last I found a woman I can be faithful to. After your divorce, he'll never consent to another marriage.
Oh, yes, I think so, in a little time. And I will help you.
You're the nicest girl I ever married.
He kisses her forehead, but she puts on her ugly face to keep him from kissing her lips. Instead, he starts to yawn.
Good night.
He leaves the bed.
Good enough.
She smiles. Later, with the barber.
Lovely weather for the time of year, Your Grace. Will Your Grace be pleased to be shaved, Your Grace?
All right.
He drapes his cape around Henry's neck. Rubbing his hands together, he picks up the bowl of shaving cream and stirs with the brush.
Do you remember telling me that my loyal guild of barbers thought I ought to marry again?
Oh, forgive me, Your Grace, sir. We took a very great liberty, Your Grace.
Not at all. Very natural interest in the welfare of the country.
You are too kind, Your Grace.
He starts to brush on the cream.
Are they still of the same opinion?
Oh, no, indeed, Your Grace. They realize their mistake.
Was it a mistake?
Oh, yes, Your Grace.
He gets his razor.
As I said at our last meeting, God knows the king's done his best to get more sons, but there comes a time in life when the well runs dry.
Henry squirms away.
You said that, did you?
Yes, I did, Your Grace.
He stands.
Get out!
The barber scurries away again. Henry sits, angrily wiping the cream from his beard with the cape, then sits back.
The well runs dry.
Later in the kitchen.
Nobody won't touch it.
Why? Whatever's wrong?
Everything. He just sits and glares.
They're not trying to make him merry again.
I'd like to see him after that German business.
After all, you can't say he hasn't tried.
Tried too often, if you ask me. Say nothing of the side dishes. A little bit of this and a little bit of that. What a man wants is regular meals.
Yes, but not the same joint every night.
The cook's wife throws a piece of fish at her husband, who plucks a bird.
Ah, oh, man loses his appetite after four courses.
How do you mean, four courses?
He got into the soup with Catherine of Aragon, tried stinking fish with Anne Boleyn, cooked Jane Seymour's goose, and gave Anna Cleves the cold shoulder.
God save him. It's no wonder he suffers in the legs.
In the dining hall, Henry sits forlorn at the head table, taking apart chunks of bread he can't bring to his mouth. Advisors at each hand turn to him.
Your Grace is sad tonight. What can we do to cheer Your Grace?
What could you do to cheer my loneliness?
Your Grace is lonely. Now that is the penalty of greatness, sir.
Greatness? I would exchange it all to be my lowest groom who sleeps above the stable with a wife who loves him.
With a deep breath, he stares at Catherine, who smiles from her table. The advisor at his left hand notices. He prompts his colleague on the other side.
Your Majesty, there is one matter, one most urgent matter. I scarcely dare to broach it. I would have waited for a happier moment, but it is so pressing.
What is it?
Your Grace, your whole kingdom most urgently implores you to marry.
Oh, no. Should I consent, it would be only put down to desires of the flesh.
Oh, never, Your Grace. Your people know you too well.
That's what I mean.
Your Grace is pleased to jest. But the will of your people has always been your law. And Your Grace, they want this marriage to a man.
I'm not eager. But if all my people wish it, what can I do? At least you have my promise to think it over.
He stands and they follow.
Good night, my lord.
The rest of the court sits again. As Henry walks around the head table to Catherine, who stands when he takes her hand, they walk through the center of the hall. And advisors motion for everyone to leave Henry and Catherine sitting alone together. With the musicians playing, the court files out, though Thomas remains, watching them, ignoring a lady's nudge. Henry and Catherine hold hands. Thomas finally gets up and joins the others outside.
You know my country is demanding a great sacrifice of me.
What is it, Your Grace?
The lords, the commons, the bishops, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, and even my royal guild of barbers are imploring me to marry again.
Really? Will it be the French princess?
No.
The emperor's niece?
No. An English girl.
Smiling, he turns to her.
If she loves me.
And puts an arm around her.
Does she, sweetheart?
She turns her face to his, and he gets them both to stand, then stares at her with wide eyes. He kisses her passionately. So Catherine is back on track to be queen. What could she possibly do to mess this up? Find out in the conclusion next time on Movies for the Blind. As I suggested last time, the film takes a bit of artistic license with history, and the Anne of Cleves era is no exception. Catherine Howard is thought to have not come on the scene until after Henry had married Anne. While it is true Henry did not really like the look of Anne from the start and never consummated their marriage, there's nothing known about Anne being in love with someone else and making herself look unpleasant, though word is she wasn't that thrilled with Henry's looks either. Also, while there was a wedding night card game, the divorce deal wasn't struck on that night. The marriage dragged out for a few months first. But Anne was indeed a wicked card player, and would play many more such games with Henry as she became a good friend of his and his daughter's and lived longer than any of the wives. For more information and links about the movies, about description, and how to subscribe, check the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast Creative Commons license. The MP3s are currently being hosted by Blind File Sharing, with easy, affordable, and accessible file storage and transfer with visually impaired users in mind. To find out more, visit blindfilesharing.com. The movies are from the Internet Archive, so please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at www.archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week. Take care.